Big show for you here today. It's a show I like doing in August, but it is a difficult one. How do each of the 12, and actually this year, 13 consensus first round range players not work out in fantasy football this year? Hayden Winks joins me to break down all 13 of those players and try to paint the negative end of the range of outcomes. Spoiler alert, it's a lot harder for some of the players than it is for others. Then we wrap it up with the fantasy hotline, taking some of your questions on the buzziest players at a training camp. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. All season long, Toyota is celebrating the passion, traditions, and unforgettable moments that make football America's obsession, from fantasy football to every kickoff, rivalry, and Sunday ritual. And it is, oh man, it's a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do that, fresh off his show, so a guy that's doing a lot of talking about ball today, it is Hayden Winks. Hayden, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Doing great. It feels like you do shows back to back, then you check the timeline and you're just like seeing who got hurt, who's ahead of who, what is John Shipley tweeted out. Everything's ramping up now.
It really is. Yeah. I locked in for about 40 minutes of a John Shipley podcast this morning. Thanks to you for putting that one out there. Tilted the Jalen Waddle injury, the brace, whatever. So, what an absolute treat. It's August, man. It's that time of year. So we got a big show, like I said, ahead of us. We are doing a little mailbag at the end of the show where we're answering your guys' most pressing question about some of these training camp hype bunnies. But before we get to that, the subject of today's show is, I think it's a fun topic to talk about, even though it is kind of depressing. It's how each of the 12, and actually 13, we're going to cheat on the last one, how the 13 first round consensus picks could not work out this year, could bust, could ruin your fantasy football season. And Hayden, I like doing this show because, I mean, sometimes it's just good to talk about like how things might not work out for some of these guys that we assume everything is going to be great. I mean, sometimes you get roasted on the internet in the middle of the season, like one of the hosts of this show did about a thing they said about Puka Nacua when his quarterback was like in the immortal chamber last year. What do you want to do? So we can get ourselves in trouble in this episode, but I do think it's a good exercise for the people out there.
Yeah, some of these players, it's almost impossible to come up with a negative case for them. And then some of them, I actually have some reasonable ones. It's definitely helpful with the floor here. My goal on this is to not say, well, they could get hurt. You know, it's every other reason except for they might get hurt, because obviously that's the number one.
Well, that's going to make it tough for the first three picks here because it is really difficult to figure out how these guys might not work out. But let's give it a shot anyway. So the consensus number one overall pick in Yahoo ADP right now is Jahmyr Gibbs, Lions running back, the only big time running back in the last, couple of days who hasn't signed a monster extension, but his is certainly on his way. Hayden, how can Jahmyr Gibbs bust and not work out in fantasy football this year?
Man, impossible question here. I'll give it a shot. They have a first round right tackle, a new center, and then their guards are pretty inexperienced, and then you have Penei Sewell switching sides. I think on the whole, it's probably just as good, if not there's more upside than last year's offensive line, which was not the best unit out there. So I think it would be some combination of that. Goff is feeling a little bit more panicked because of that. New coordinator, but I actually like the new coordinator that they're bringing in here. So I think it's like some type of combination between that. I think then the other thing, which I would say is very unlikely, would be if like Pacheco does play some version of the David Montgomery role. I would find all of that really, really unlikely. So I feel about as good as of him as the first overall player in half PPR, and I really struggled here.
Yeah, this one is difficult. The Pacheco factor is like at least worth considering because, like, when I ran through my initial projections, my initial rankings, I just had Pacheco completely almost like not a non-factor, but, pretty close to a non-factor. Like somebody I'm not even considering drafting as like a running back insurance policy in fantasy right now. So I guess we could be underrating that. I mean, this is a guy who has been, it's been useful in the NFL, if not downright, like for a seventh round pick, very productive, but I mean, it's just, he offers not a lot of explosive ability and hasn't even really necessarily been like that great of a short yardage guy, which is what would bang Jahmyr Gibbs as the first overall pick if it was to happen.
Right. I think just the upside, you have to just take it on here, because there was 8 games that Montgomery missed or played under 25% of the snaps, and Gibbs averaged 25 half PPR points in them. So I think the most likely scenario is David Montgomery's role is, you know, cut in half, and that goes to Pacheco, and then the other half of it goes to Jahmyr Gibbs. So to me, it'd be maybe like just the Lions defense was so bad. The offensive line doesn't materialize. And then Jared Goff takes a step back, and now the Lions finish 10th in scoring. And then at that point, that's the difference where Puka goes crazy, Jamar Chase goes crazy, and then Gibbs, mm-hmm. you know, he still finishes a top 5 fantasy running back, but he's not the first overall pick. That's about as worst case scenario as I could possibly think of.
Yeah, I guess that's the key here is like we're thinking about even just like a moderately disappointing season for Jahmyr Gibbs would be considered a bust at the first overall pick. But I think it's really difficult to paint a scenario where he absolutely ruins your fantasy football season, which is why he's going as the first overall player. Last thing I just wanted to touch on here with Gibbs before we move off of him, because you mentioned Drew Petzing. I kind of want to expand on why, and because to be transparent, I share this opinion. Like, I am pretty optimistic and I like the Petzing hire, but he is without a doubt one of those like fantasy Twitter boogeymen, you know, that's out there. Like, people hate the Drew Petzing offense. Can you kind of expand on why you are a little bit more optimistic maybe on him as the coordinator here?
This was more for the McDaniel offense, because I was starting to see against like too high defenses, who's running the ball effectively. And obviously it was like the Devon Achane Dolphins, the Raheem Mostert era, like that was number one. But number two was the Petzing Cardinals, and they only had James Conner. I really liked the James Conner stuff, but a lot of that was just, you know, the lanes were wide open, and he kind of runs a different scheme than some of the other offenses that we're seeing. It's a little bit more smash mouth, and it's a little bit more of a wrinkle into some of these too high shells. So we'll see. He just kind of pops up in some of the advanced metrics. And I'm sure that some of the Petzing stuff that people didn't like was just maybe the roles of the receivers. But in terms of just like focusing on like Jahmyr Gibbs and stuff, I feel good about that.
Yeah, my theory on Petzing coming in here, and it sounds like we're kind of on the same page, is that because watching the Lions receivers that were like very in close order for reception perception, did their profiles, I felt like when I was immersed in the passing game there, for the most part, was just what they usually do in the pass game. You know, it felt very similar to the Ben Johnson era, and I do think Dan Campbell has a pretty strong hand in that. I think Petzing's here mostly to improve the run game, which, you know, everybody was on Petzing all the time about Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. And I've obviously thrown some of those stones here, especially with the receiver usage, but pretty much no qualms with the run game. So I actually think he's a net positive for Gibbs. Maybe we can come back to that later when we talk about another Lions player who is in the first round here in a little bit. But let's move to the second overall pick here, which is Bijan Robinson, a running back who did just get a big fat contract extension here pretty recently. How can it go wrong for Bijan Robinson this year?
So to me, this is where the difference between Gibbs and Bijan, I do think there's a lower floor with Bijan, just because we have a new coaching staff. I don't trust the offensive line nearly as much, because the quarterback play can like really fall apart if Tua feels pressured and stuff. And it's not the exact offense that they got the most out of him with the McDaniel era. Then that's where I can be like, okay, the Falcons, they can finish, you know, bottom 5, bottom 10 points this year. Like, absolutely. And there's just like no chance that the Lions could. So I think the difference between Gibbs and Bijan to me is more of the floor case. And the reason why I've actually been thinking about ranking Puka and Jamar Chase even ahead of Bijan is just the combination of like Juwan Taylor is your right tackle. It's Tua, who has some level of a back injury, and then Penix, and then with Stefanski. They might be looking for a future quarterback soon. Plus, the defense, both of their first round edge rushers, probably not going to play this year with Jalen Walker just going down with the torn ACL. So, like, to me, the Falcons could, like, they can pick first overall. Like, I think they're like in that range of outcome. And that's where, like, okay, Bijan just doesn't get enough goal line touchdowns, and then he finishes 4 points behind Jahmyr Gibbs on a per week basis, and that's where he didn't matter.
Here's a despicable question. Which running back do you think is more likely to pop in, you know, 5 to 6 very annoying touchdowns this year? Isaiah Pacheco or Brian Robinson?
I think Brian Robinson's clearly better than Pacheco, personally.
Me too. Right. Exactly.
And then like Bijan, for a couple seasons, has not gotten all of the goal line carries. So like there's at least some precedent of that. Obviously, the same thing with Jahmyr Gibbs. But I just think Brian Robinson was somebody that I'm pretty sure he's making more money. I just think that he's a better player.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that one. And I mean, when you look at my overall rankings right now, I do actually have Ja'Marr Chase over Bijan Robinson for some of the reasons that we've outlined here. And that's why it's going to be tough in a moment when we have to talk about how can it not work out for Ja'Marr Chase, because I think there's so many ways that it can work out for Ja'Marr Chase this year. And I mean, even the floor is extremely high there. Yeah, I don't love taking a running back, and Nate and I are going to do a show on this at some point later this month, just like we did last year, like looking at offensive projections versus ADP and like the guys that are getting taken really high. The Falcons always show up with this because they always have these two really good players here. And I think this could be, I think this offense could really be brutal this year, not just because of the quarterback situation, which you talked about there, and some of the offensive line concerns. Where are you at with, I know we just talked about Drew Petzing, like Drew Petzing's former, mentor there, Kevin Stefanski. Where are you at with the Stefanski experience relative to obviously how it's gone in Cleveland and just where he's at from an offensive play caller standpoint?
For a while there, I probably would have ranked him as a top 10 OC. Maybe the last couple of years, I haven't found the right answers, but I think him and Deshaun just were like never on the same page. I think that Tua fits maybe the Stefanski style a little bit more than Michael Penix, but at the same time, they're going to have to see more Michael Penix before they like firmly move on from both of these guys, which I think is the most likely outcome here. I like Stefanski. I think in the run game, I think that the quick hitting stuff could all work with him. I think that Deshaun was just like not willing to kind of play that style, and I think they really struggled there. Those offensive lines were really bad too. I think the Falcons' offensive line is definitely a tier two above that. But just look at the implied team totals. The Lions are at 26 points. The Falcons are at 21 points. And if you had to ask me, is that gap going to be more than 5 points per game this year? I would say yes. Like that feels, those two feel too close together to me.
Yeah, way too close together. I wanted to ask you about the Stefanski thing just because I think it has been really difficult for me to kind of figure that out as I'm talking about the Falcons here, because it is a little bit difficult to divorce Stefanski from just how poorly of a fit it was with Deshaun Watson from the beginning. And then he's got to do things like hire Ken Dorsey to like kind of move them into a spread world, and then that, and then take like play calling, give play calling back and forth, all that whole thing. Also Stefanski, I guess, is not going to call plays this year. It's going to be Tommy Rees again, and like I just don't really know how to judge Tommy Rees based on the goofball quarterback situation that was in Cleveland. It's just very weird, but I think it is still an important variable to consider. Even for a guy like Drake London, like one of the nagging things I can't get out of the back of my head is just how much I loved the way Drake London was deployed last year, and really the last 2 years in Zach Robinson's offense. And like, is there a part of the range of outcomes here where Drake London just gets moved back into X full time, especially when the other two guys were shown on the screen? It's like, you know, I still got the candle lit for Jahan Dotson, but it's Jahan Dotson and Zachariah Branch. I mean, those guys are not playing X receiver. Okay. We know that for sure. So Drake London in this like dynamic Z, you know, slot heavy role. And I know we're talking about Bijan Robinson, but this is like how the offense just goes really poorly. And then you know, he's the running back attached to the 31st ranked offense in the NFL. And last year, Hayden, one of the most bizarre things that maybe only I care about is that they came out in Cleveland last year and like moved Jerry Jeudy to X and Cedric Tillman to Z. And I was like, wait, that's so weird. Like that bothers me a little bit when I'm projecting the ceiling for the Atlanta Falcons offense.
I really haven't even thought about that to that degree, but I think you are spot on there. Like if they're trying to get Branch on the field in a year where they're really tanking, the only way you can do that is if he's a slot wide receiver, which is the exact role that we want Drake London to be in. So I think that makes me a little bit nervous here. I just think that the floor for the Falcons seems really, really bad. I think offense, some of the aging players, like their left tackle has been around forever. Juwan Taylor's been so inconsistent. Like all of a sudden, like I do think there's some more downside risk. And I think separately to Bijan, It's if Puka Nacua and Ja'Marr Chase have these seasons, like we're talking about top 10 seasons at receiver of all time, which I fully, fully believe is possible here.
Sure.
Even if Bijan has like the same season he had last year, if Puka and Chase just go a tier above that, which I think is totally possible, then that would be another way where it fails, where you just kind of look stupid drafting him second overall.
Yeah, and he has like 95 really scammy Tua-based receptions that then also evaporate when Michael Penix gets on. Yeah, there's a lot of ways where it goes really wrong for the Falcons, but I think Bijan's relatively safe. But let's move to those two receivers and talk about the other end of the range of outcomes here, which is going to be really difficult. You mentioned the ceiling that's really present for these two guys, but Ja'Marr Chase at the third overall pick. How could it not work out for Ja'Marr Chase and something beyond Joe Burrow gets hurt?
Matt, I've got nothing. I mean, I really don't have anything. I mean, what can you possibly say? I guess, like Josh has brought this up on our show, they're tinkering with like under center stuff this year, and maybe they're like just, you know, galaxy braining this. I think it's worth them trying some of the under center stuff. And Nate brought this up where that's just like to help like just Chase Brown and have a different wrinkle. And like, yeah. So they're not just the same exact offense. And I think because the offensive line has gotten so much better, not multiple tiers better over the last couple of years, I think they could have some success doing it. So I think this is the time about the offseason where I would start throwing in those wrinkles. Maybe if they just like really start overthinking things and that doesn't work, then maybe the Bengals are closer to like, you know, 8th, 10th in scoring. My baseline assumption is like this has a chance to be the highest scoring offense in the league, and that you want Higgins, Chase, Burrow, Brown, like you just want all of them.
Yeah, I mean, we just had the show yesterday with the highest upside picks in each round with Chris Allen, and our pick for the first round was Ja'Marr Chase because, I mean, this is terrible analysis, but I'll repeat it again. That's how much I love this terrible analysis. He's just like the type of talent that's due for a 20-plus touchdown season literally at any moment, and that's why it's really difficult to pick him for this exercise. And because even if the offense for some reason takes a step back because they can't figure out, and I'm with you generally that like they should be trying to figure out the under center stuff and, you know, add more wrinkles than just Joe Burrow does the, you know, field general thing and the whole point and shoot spread offense, it's probably worth it. But even if it doesn't work out, they still try to force it. Like Ja'Marr Chase is going to eat a bunch of easy catches there because they make his role more and more dynamic every year. So I do think, of the 13 players we're going to talk about here, I did feel like he was pretty convincingly the hardest one to make a case for how it doesn't work out besides he gets hurt or whatever, because he's the best receiver in football. It's really hard for the best receiver in football to bust out in fantasy pretty much.
I guess maybe the other things to kind of nitpick would be the defense does look a lot better this year than it did previous. And
true.
You just never know about the rest of the division. You know, the Steelers play really slow paced and the Browns are going to be completely pathetic, that, you know, maybe they don't feel as stressed about hanging 30 points as they have in previous seasons, but they still have a lot to prove on defense. You're kind of just like hoping that Dexter Lawrence and some of their other free agents kind of take the next step. But yeah, he's such an automatic pick in the top three.
Totally. I mean, if that happens, like T. Higgins is a bad pick where he's going. Probably not Ja'Marr Chase is a bad pick where he's going. Okay, fourth overall pick is Puka Nacua, Los Angeles Rams receiver. I guess I have to ask you, like, how does this work? How does this one not work out without, again, the hurt dynamic for Puka Nacua or Matthew Stafford? So how does this one fail for Puka?
Yeah, he's just a biter off the field. I think the civil face, like, just creeps up, you know?
Don't mean to be glib about it, but like literally he's in a rehab center by week 5. You know, I'm just,
who knows? Typically civil cases don't mean suspensions in the NFL, but also if you're in civil cases and you're going to rehab, then like obviously there's concerns. We've obviously seen the streams. Like to me, like him versus Chase, like who's more likely to have something off the field? It's obviously Puka because there's some evidence of that. I think still the most likely scenario is that does not impact his playing time whatsoever. And all the rest of my notes for Puka are just sensational. And then the other thing that he has is Matthew Stafford's left tackle also in trouble. And like that's kind of how things can kind of spiral where, you know, Matthew Stafford's back in the chamber. But at the same time, you can say the same things about Joe Burrow's health. So I don't even know which one would be more likely to get injured. I think that Stafford may be a little bit more likely to miss some time. But I mean, there's nothing about bad to say about Puka individually here.
So like I said, last year when Scott and I did the show, we painted a pretty gloomy picture at the time for Puka Nacua because it was in the middle of like the Matthew Stafford hysteria with the back injury, all that stuff. So at the risk of getting smoked again on this, let me actually say that when Nate and I did the top 10 offenses episode on Football 301, we both had the Rams as the number one ranked offense. So instead of like sitting there, you know, doing the typical NFL media thing and talking about how awesome the Rams are, we're actually like, let's paint how this can go wrong for the Rams. And there are actually a lot of ways where this offense can fall apart pretty quickly. And of course, some of them do involve injuries to the quarterback. Devontae Adams is 34 years old and a declining player. You know, no matter what, like what level of decline it is, he is, I think, objectively, you know, a declining player. Does he go right off the cliff? Then we're talking about, you know, Jordan Whittington and Kanata Mumfield, not super jacked up about those guys increasing the offensive potency. Do they try to ram their head in the wall with the 13 personnel stuff? And this year it's just not that cute. You don't catch anybody by surprise. You mentioned the Alaric Jackson thing, but then I keep coming back to this, Hayden. And like, this is a theory of mine because we haven't really seen an action yet. I still think even if all of that happens, because of the way Puka Nacua is used, he's so like chaos and quarterback, not proof, because nobody's quarterback proof. We watched this last year with Justin Jefferson. But if you even just compare the role of Justin Jefferson to the role of Puka Nacua, the guy that's going to get away with a scam is definitely the Puka Nacua archetype of the player.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Like all those negative notes that you're talking about, you're like, okay, that's how Kyren doesn't get home. That's how Devontae Adams doesn't get home. That's how Matthew Stafford doesn't get home. And I'm like, Puka's still going to leave with 10 targets no matter what. It's almost maybe the opposite would be like, if the defense is so good and they're just blowing teams out, like, do you have to give Puka the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th target? And maybe that the Jamar Chase, they kind of separate. JSN, just like, it's overwhelming how many more targets they get. Man, that's just making things up. I mean, this one feels pretty automatic. I feel way worse about those things that you mentioned, which I do agree with are true. When I'm sitting there, Devontae Adams versus DJ Moore at the 4-5 turn, Devontae Adams versus DeAndre Swift, those type of things make me nervous. The three tight end stuff, like sometimes Devontae Adams would be like the lone wide receiver there. At some point, like that should just be Puka Nacua. And then the other thing, I know we're supposed to talk negative. If Puka Nacua starts getting the red zone like stuff instead of Devontae Adams, it's over. Like it's over for fantasy. Like, he will be outscoring everybody. And even without that, he was still outscoring everybody. So to me, in full PPR, I'm actually considering him first overall. That's how I feel about Puka.
Yeah, I have Jamar Chase as my first overall pick in full PPR. And yeah, Puka Nacua is right up there as well. I agree. I mean, there's a range of outcomes where if he seeded red zone work even more so to Devontae Adams, like, and the defense does get better, as you outlined there, he kind of becomes fancy Zay Flowers, like a rich man Zay Flowers. But that's not good. Like, that's so unlikely that at age 33, 34 for Devontae Adams, he's getting more work from, you know, the ascendant superstar player in his prime, hoping to make big on a contract at this point. But yeah, tough exercise for the first four players. These are really good first four picks. It is going to get a little bit more interesting as we talk through picks 5 to 8, which we are going to do right on the other side of this quick break. All right, we're back. We are continuing to go through the tortured exercise of figuring out how each of the consensus first round picks could not work out in fantasy football this year. Let's go to the 5th overall pick here, Hayden, and talk about 49ers running back Christian McCaffrey. I guess once again, we can't say the word hurt. Like, he gets hurt. Does that mean we can't say the word substation? Can we show the Eye of Sauron meme again that we showed on the show yesterday? I would love to see it just because I think it's funny. But how does it not work out for Christian McCaffrey this year?
I mean, if everyone else stays injured and the offensive line doesn't materialize, then the 49ers can finish 16th in scoring this year. I've never said that about the 49ers with Shanahan. This feels like the most fragile offense that they've had, just because like they're reliant on all the old players, and all the old players are also injured aside from Christian McCaffrey. So I think it'd be a combination of this is not a top 10 offense. The Christian McCaffrey run game numbers still look bad. I think that's partially a CMC thing, but also partially the offensive line's not very good. Trent Williams is old as well. Like if he is not part of that offensive line for a stretch, like the offensive line to me looks pretty weak across the board. So it's just, yeah, like all of a sudden they're projected for 22 points per game instead of currently projected 25. And if you just like look at the history of the Shanahan offenses, typically they're way above 25.
I think this is less a Christian McCaffrey conversation and more like pull the thread on what you just said there, that I think this is on paper got to be, I mean, one of the worst Niners offenses in a minute. Yes. There's a lot of issues with this team right now, to the point that like I've made no bones about this. I am Cardinals curious this year. I don't know how. No, I don't know how long it's going to take. Like, can I get 20 more days, August 26th? Can I convince myself that the Cardinals are going to finish higher than the 49ers in the NFC West? It probably involves a lot more injuries, a lot more substation talk, but
yeah,
it's concerning that that's even, and obviously my brain's poisoned, but it's concerning that that's even in my mind at any point. That's just how rough it looks on paper right now for the Niners.
Yeah, and that their defense is still a work in progress, coming back from a lot of injuries on that side of the ball. So like that could be, you know, closer to average to below average, which for stints of the year, they were definitely below average. And then the schedule, we have to get Boone on the phone real quick to hit us with the exact schedule numbers. But just looking at the rest of the division, it can't be an easy schedule versus last year, where the talk of the town was always, well, it doesn't matter. The 49ers schedule is just so cake that Christian McCaffrey is going to walk to a number one finish, which he did. So I still draft McCaffrey with the concerns, but I have more concerns about just, you know, Brock Purdy, George Kittle coming back from injury, Mike Evans, where I'm like looking around like, man, this team is really fragile. Like, just look at the players that right there. Like, that's not like the most steadily starting 11 there. And then I think the depth for the most part is pretty weak too.
Right. I mean, Debo Samuel, like, still a useful player, but not helping you down the football field whatsoever, not helping you against me. He's like just the exaggerated funhouse mirrors of version of the player that he's always been. I don't even think, like, Matt Maiocco doesn't even think Christian Kirk is going to make the team. He's covered the 49ers forever. I liked Stribling as a day two sleeper. And, you know, picking him 33 overall, that's a whole separate conversation, but it wasn't like, oh yeah, Stribling's going to come in here and he's got to be like the most explosive player on the offense right away. And yet he kind of needs to be the most explosive player on the offense right away, because Mike Evans will make plays downfield, but Mike Evans is old and not moving as well as he used to at this point. So Chris McCaffrey last year, among running backs with 150 plus runs, there was 33 of them. He was 27th in percentage of runs that went for 10 plus yards. Like, there was not a lot of explosive plays last year for Christian McCaffrey. If you just want to talk about like success rate on those runs, obviously that was higher because he would move the chains, but there just wasn't a ton of juice overall for McCaffrey. And I don't even know how much that's a him thing. 25th in yards before contact per rush attempt for him last year out of, again, 33 qualified runners. I can't get out of my head how he was talking about how it was the hardest year of my life last year at the end of the season. Some of that was, you know, his personal life. He had a child and, you know, all that sort of thing. But a lot of it is like he was worked to hell last year. I mean, fourth most opportunities for any running back targets and rush attempts since the year 2000, regular season, playoffs combined. Again, I know we're not supposed to do the he's going to get hurt thing, but that would be the concern for how it doesn't work out. Is it like, not only is he, maybe he stays healthy, but he's just a severely diminished player than what he was last year.
Yeah, if you're ranking the guys most likely to get hurt, he would have to be at the top of it, just because there's a history of players coming off of that amount of workload, missing time. Plus, the guys that get hurt the most are the guys that touch the ball the most, and he's at the very top of that list. At the same time, he takes care of his body so well. He looks incredible still to me. Maybe the other thing would be Shanahan's already said that he doesn't want him to have the same workload, which I think is like nice. They say that so he can keep him fresher. You lose five touches per game and then he's still not moving the needle as a rusher, and like that starts to matter. But I mean, the starting point that we're talking about is, I mean, he lapped the field at at running back last year. So like, you can start nitpicking some of this stuff, and I'm still rolling the dice.
Yeah, and where I talk about like Bijan can have 90, you know, scammy receptions from two or something, like he, even if McCaffrey is completely, the wheels are falling off, where he's going to get, you know, 80, like he's going to moonwalk to 80 catches. Like that's going to happen basically, I think, forever. Yeah, I will believe Shanahan doesn't want to overwork McCaffrey when I freaking see it, bro. Like he says yeah. that every year they get some third round running back, fourth round running back that it's like, okay, yeah, Garendo, maybe that would make sense to take some, and that never happens. I mean, that Kyle Shanahan is your buddy that like wakes up and says, I'm never drinking again. It's like, okay, pal, we'll yeah. believe it when we see it. Yeah.
See you next okay. weekend.
All right. Sixth. yeah. See you next weekend, buddy. All right. Sixth overall pick, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I actually think this is maybe our first one where I'm like,
yep,
I could see a scenario here. I don't know if I believe it, but I could see a scenario. So what's your scenario for how JSN doesn't work out as a first round pick this year?
So this is the first time in a fantasy podcast we haven't said the word regression for 30 minutes to start. I would say this is the first time where I think you can actually say it with JSN, in the fact that he had a 35% target share. The next closest was at 32%, which was Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's just really difficult to repeat. And obviously when you re-sign Rashid Shaheed, you would have to assume that they'd want to get him more involved than he was last year. I think that they couldn't get Cooper Kupp more involved than he was just because he wasn't moving as well. And then the other thing is just you're just changing coordinators here, where maybe that coordinator doesn't feel like he has to get JSN, you know, the 12th target in of the game. I still like the new coordinator. They really talked him up. There was no ties to Mike McDonald, which I kind of like, when it's just like all of a sudden it's like this guy just was awesome on the whiteboards and we just trust his game plan. It comes from the Shanahan tree. But at the same time, it's just really hard to do it at 35% targets. And without Kubiak, and if they're not hitting these downfield shots as they did last year, I just don't think that they're going to have this same amount of targets to JSN this year, where I think that the Bengals and the Rams are going to keep doing that with Jamar Chase and Puka. And JSN's done this for 1 year, where the other guys have done it for multiple years.
Yeah, that's a good point that he's only done it the 1 year. Now, I think he's obviously an ascending player. I don't hold the first two seasons that much against him, honestly, at all. But you mentioned the target share there, 35.8%. Not only is that number one last year, it's number one for any wide receiver since the year 2015. Now, number two was DeAndre Hopkins in 2017 with 33.7%. So there's actually a pretty decent gap between number two and number one. However, number five, after Michael Thomas and Antonio Brown, 2019 and 2015 respectively, was 2018 DeAndre Hopkins. So we have seen a guy hold at like 33% in back-to-back years. Can JSN dip to like 32% and still pay off ADP? I think yes, for sure. The question just really is like, what is your level of belief in guys? You mentioned Rashid Shaheed, or even, you know, AJ Barner takes another step forward. Elijah Arroyo gets more involved this year. Torrey Horton, you know, I'm still a hard and fast Torrey Horton truther. Is he somebody that takes a step forward? You know, Cooper Kupp is still there as like kind of a coach on the field at this point. But yeah, those were like kind of the things where I could say, do we get then down to a 28% target share for JSN, and can he pay off the sixth overall pick in this offense with a 28% target share?
Yeah, I think that would be close to his floor, just because I really like Shaheed. I think that Shaheed offers more than what he's been kind of given to throughout his career, but that's also just me kind of just projecting on some of the underneath stuff that I've seen from him. I think to me, it would still be the downfield stuff was absolute purity last year. He had 20 yards per game more than he did in the 2023-2024 years. On targets 15 plus yards down the football field. If you're looking at JSN's yards per target, that was at 10.5. Like even the best wide receivers in the NFL typically are in the high nine. So that comes down a little bit. Completion percentage over expected, that was at plus 10%. Those are the type of numbers that tend to decrease, especially when you're running so hot on the downfield stuff, where to me it's more like, okay, we're at 32% targets. Now it's at 9.6 yards per target. That's still an incredible player, but by the time you're trying to compete with Jamar Chase and Puka Nacua, things have kind of fallen apart.
575 yards last year on throws of 20 plus air yards. That was the 16th most for any receiver since 2015. So there's definitely some regression concerns for JSN, which is why I personally have him ranked as my eighth overall player behind the next two guys that we are going to talk about here. So let's try to paint the negative picture on those two gentlemen here, starting with Jonathan Taylor, the consensus seventh overall player off the board. How can it not work out for the newly highly paid Jonathan Taylor?
To me, this should just be setbacks with Daniel Jones, with Alec Pierce, and then all of a sudden there's just not enough weaponry here. They have new tackle play as well. I still am just such a believer in Shane Steichen, and Jonathan Taylor to me still looks just absolutely incredible on the football field. So even with that, I would still view him as a solid player. But without Alec Pierce over the or without Daniel Jones over the last couple of years, or the backup quarterbacks, I mean, his numbers do get like cut in half between his wins and losses. So like, to me, that's what it is. At the same time, man, it seems like Daniel Jones is moving around well enough, and like there's also this kind of thing where it's like, all right, if Michael Pittman's not involved, if Daniel Jones can't move quite as well, but he's moving enough to play, it's like, do we just give Jonathan Taylor even more work, more receptions? And I think that would kind of alleviate some of the concerns. But it, to me, it's just like, who's most likely for the quarterback to get injured? Daniel Jones in this first round, because he literally is coming back from a torn Achilles. Like, to me, that would be the answer.
Yeah, that is definitely the answer. And I know we are supposed to be negative here, but there's definitely a thought that I have where Taylor catches more passes this year because as you mentioned, like, Daniel Jones isn't moving quite as well. But at the same time, though, the Alec Pierce injury, it sure would be nice if this guy could get on the practice field at some point. Like, that is there's been 0.0 positive injury news for Alec Pierce. And then we're talking about, like, you know, I think at one point this offseason, I said, you know, Laquon Treadwell, shout out to him, he's like still hanging around the NFL. He's still hanging around and cashing checks, baby. And now it's like, well, Laquon Treadwell might play snap for the Colts this year. Like, that's a talking point out of training camp. Okay, so then it's like, we got Laquon Treadwell on the field. You know, I mean, I love Josh Downs, obviously, 100%. But, you know, Ashton Dool and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, their like solution to all this might be, let's sign Keenan Allen in the year 2026. That offense is going to suddenly start to feel really, really tight. And at that point, are we teams just loading the box? There's no Alec Pierce or ineffective Alec Pierce. And I don't know, that is definitely, we could be in for a slog of a season for Jonathan Taylor. I can certainly see that playing out.
Yeah, I'm reading Stephen Holder, and he says right now it's Josh Downs is one, and then it's Ashton Doolin, Laquon Treadwell, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine in some order for 2-4. So like, they need some help at wide receiver there. Yeah. I'm guessing that Alec Pierce is going to be fine. Apparently he's moving around better, like when he's rehabbing around, but you know, he's very important, and he's supposed to be going into a role that he's never necessarily had as somebody that's going to get probably more in breakers, more quick hitting stuff, which I thought last year Alec Pierce is eventually going to be able to do that. But if you don't have that presence, and then Josh Downs probably not going to be quite as effective when he's, you know, playing more outside and two wide receiver sets, then yeah, like you said, this offense just could feel a little tighter.
Yeah, they're just one of those teams, the same thing with the Falcons, where there's a little bit of, as Scott likes to say, look out below potential, where this is just, this team really falls apart really quickly, which is certainly, that's got to be on your radar with the Colts just over the course of any conversation you're having with them in the offseason. That is definitely true for them. So that would be how it doesn't work out for Jonathan Taylor. Anytime you're it's kind of funny, like, there's a few running backs in the first round here where I'm like, how good is this team going to be? You know, when we talk about Atlanta, when we talk about Indianapolis, and I don't know about you, man, but I do not like attaching my fantasy running backs to teams where I have this vibe. And we're a little bit pushing that here with these two guys who we've talked about. I mean, shoot, even McCaffrey, we had that conversation, and there's one more of those discussions to come up later on. But first, let's talk with the eighth overall pick. I'm on Ross St. Brown. Honestly, I think this is just as difficult for me to paint the really negative picture as like Puka Nacua, which is why, again, I have him ranked as my third receiver and seventh overall player coming into the season this year.
I have him seventh overall as well. This to me would just be some type of a new role for Amon-Ra St. Brown with a new coordinator. But even then, at this point, I know you've mentioned it, like, Amon-Ra St. Brown's kind of just doing it all. He can, aside from just winning go balls down the field, but you don't have to do that. If he's playing on the inside, outside, like, I think that he would be able to survive. And this is not just like some gimmicky slot wide receiver anymore. It hasn't been that way in a while, but he just keeps taking the next step. So it would just be like Pettsing's just not in the same, or doesn't have Amon Ra on the same role. Laporte is flashing. J-Mo's taking the next leap. They have to get Gibbs involved. And then all of a sudden they're averaging 25 points per game instead of more than that. And then like it gets squeezed a little bit. But man, even then, I think he would still be a top five or so wide receiver.
Yeah, he just is a guy that is so safe from a projection standpoint, from a floor perspective. I pretty much think he's going to be ranked as like the fifth receiver in fantasy every year, and he's going to finish as the third receiver in fantasy pretty much every year until he retires. You know, normally when coordinators come in, we do the whole like this guy into this role. This happens obviously with St. Brown all the time. Yeah, the Amon Ra St. Brown in the Marvin Harrison Jr. role, that would not be fun. That would be like the opposite of that. You know, Amon Ra St. Brown in the Amari Cooper, you know, Browns role. That's not what anyone actually wants to hear. And I don't think that would happen, to be clear. Like, I have insane. Marv's rookie season 15% on nine routes. I will go ahead and take the under on Amon Ra St. Brown 15% nine routes. Don't think that's going to happen. He was at 7.8% last year. Like I said, the buck stops with Dan Campbell here. There's no way Drew Petzing in his interview for the offensive coordinator position was like, hey Dan, here's a pitch, what if we played Amon Ra more at X? Like that's not gonna happen.
Come on.
I
was looking at Ian Hardis's timeline, and he said that right now the number three wide receiver is Greg Dortch, out of actually ahead of Isaac Tesla. That's where it's like, okay, Dortch is playing some slot, and now Amon Ra is like legitimately playing outside and stuff. But I mean, come on, like, you don't change the guys that are, you know, making you the most potent offense over the last half decade.
I saw that post, you know, and look, Ian's like a Greg Dortch sicko, so I'm gonna, that's my first asterisk on that. My second is, and we're going to come back to this when we do this fantasy hotline segment at the end of it, the type of receivers that flash in training camp to certain people. Again, we're going to put a pin in that conversation because I have a lot of thoughts on that, and we're going to unpack that a little bit later. But to just finish up the conversation here on St. Brown, I honestly really, really struggle with how this doesn't work out for him. I guess it's just essentially he runs bad on touchdown luck, but he was the most involved receiver among any receiver on his team in terms of targets inside the 10-yard line. So that would just be how it goes wrong for him, as he's a four touchdown player somehow. Like he's fancy Zay Flowers and everybody else scores touchdowns, but what are you going to do? That would be tough for me to paint that picture. So even if chaos happens for the Lions, I think he's pretty insulated from that. So that was our most pathetic attempt to find a way to how it doesn't work out for someone. So on that note, let's take another quick break. We come back, we've got more players to talk about how they actually won't work out this year, and we will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. These two next picks here, Hayden, at number 9 and number 10, I do think are interesting, and I can, now we're starting to get to the area where, all right, it's a little less safe here. Starting with 9th overall pick, CeeDee Lamb, who I am a couple of spots behind the Yahoo ADP here. Not significantly. I still have him ranked, you know, as a top 12 player for me, but it's certainly a little bit closer with guys behind him than the guys before him. So 9th overall pick, CeeDee Lamb, how does it not work out for him?
It's just that the George Pickens kind of just matches him one for one, and then that means that CeeDee Lamb's not in the 30% target share, which I think that he firmly can be. But last year is a 26% target share. If you remove the two injured games from CeeDee Lamb, that was 89 yards per game, which is still plenty enough. But there's a difference between, you know, Jamar Chase could average 110, Puka Nacua can average 110. And I'm just not sure if CeeDee Lamb's going to get that with George Pickens that involved. I think most of it last year was just, he didn't score as many touchdowns per game than he typically does. But you also could just argue like there's a reason for that. They have like Javonte Williams in the power back role, different coordinator that I think is a little bit more balanced. And then George Pickens is kind of awesome in that area. So I would say that the touchdown difference between him and the rest of the first round wide receivers could be the actual difference.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. It's to me still very possible that CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens are both great picks. And that's kind of how I have it ranked right now. And I really like taking both those guys where they go. So I actually, but I have them in the same tier. So I'm kind of hedging my bets about like which one of these guys could have the massive season. And I go kind of both ways on the Pickens. Is he going to move around more, you know, this year, which is what they're saying out of training camp and whatever. And part of me is like, well, they said that all again. They said that all last year, and then they never did. He played a historically low percentage of his snaps in the slot relative to his production, 7.6%. He still averaged 84 yards per game. And yet that's kind of my point that like he put 7.6% of his snaps in the slot. Like he can actually only go up. And even that, I think, doesn't matter for CeeDee Lamb. In fact, Hayden, I could argue it the other way, that because they now have a real deal third receiver in Ryan Flournoy, and it's not like Kevontae Turpin or whatever, like CeeDee Lamb, who actually played the lowest percentage of his snaps in the slot last year, actually could see his slot rate go up.
Yeah, I could definitely see that part. I still think that CeeDee Lamb still would be awesome on the perimeter. But
totally,
I'm with you. The Cowboys, like, this team can finish first in scoring this year. Like, they return everybody. I think they have very competent coaches, especially on that side of the ball. As long as they get the left tackle spot figured out there, and they got a couple different options to figure that out, this team's going to put up crazy amount of points there. And I still don't trust the defense. It's getting definitely better, and it could be like a fringe top 10 one, but this team should be in plenty of shootouts. I still feel very good about the George Pickens side of the equation too. Like, when you're just watching the Cowboys, you can just tell the safeties. It's just like, okay, which side's going to have the second safety? And then the ball, Dak Prescott just throws the ball to the other side of the field. And for a couple of the games early on, they were like kind of shading towards Pickens, and then CeeDee Lamb had nice games, and it kind of flipped the other way around. So it could be maybe just like a little bit less consistent versus what we've typically had with CeeDee Lamb. But man, this is at the margins here. I think that he's still firmly a round one player.
Yeah, they're kind of the rich man's Bears, where I've said, which Bears player do I want? Yes, like I'm comfortable with all of them. They're kind of even more so than that, because it's really only two guys. I mean, I really like Ryan Flournoy. He's a good player, good wide receiver three that I think could maybe moonlight as a wide receiver two, but he's not going to be commanding, you know, a Roma Dunze, Luther Burden type target share in this offense. But speaking of the Bears, one of the reasons I've been even more and more bullish on the Bears is I think that defense is going to absolutely stink this year. They're in a lot of trouble. Dallas, on the other hand, 32nd in EPA per play last year as defense. I think that's only going to go up. Like, does that matter for these pass catchers who were going crazy last year as their defense with Matt Eberflus, more Bears talk, is just giving it up on the other side of the ball? Does that move the needle at all from that perspective?
Yeah, it could a little bit. I do think this, I mean, like you said, they can go from like dead last in categories to, I think, a fringe top 10. And basically half of their defense is going to have new starters, and that, like, you can throw in Quinton Williams to that as well. And a couple of their other players are young players, like Donovan Ezeraki, like those types could like take another step up. So that is a theory. I still think that division is you're going to find some shootouts with the Commanders. You're going to find some tight, high scoring games with the Eagles. So I still feel really good about it. But I think the difference between Amon-Ra and CeeDee Lamb, I think there is a notable difference there, just in terms of the exact volume that you're getting. And then also, like you said, the Lions defense is just a total train wreck. And I think the Cowboys have graduated past that.
Yeah, there's just no way, always a famous last words in football, there's no way that secondary is going to be as much of a disaster as it was last year. I mean, that was sometimes when I've been charting receivers against the Cowboys, I'm like, is this even usable? Like, this is the success rate adjuster.
Some of the Diggs reps, like, he was like saying my fault before the receiver even had caught the pass. There was like some press, I forget who it was, it might be like Brian Thomas or somebody, where like he tried to press him, like fell over and was just looking at the sideline, yeah, being like, sorry guys. I'm like, what is this?
Sorry about that. Oh yeah, and crazy. That was probably like his one press coverage rep of the entire game, because otherwise we're just back in shells and that middle of the field's open. Like, technically this is middle of the field closed coverage, but let me tell you what, that middle of the field is open. Okay, so yeah, it was absolutely brutal stuff. So I think Dallas is not going to be the 32nd ranked defense this year, which might shave off a little bit of ceiling here, where CeeDee Lamb, I definitely think there are a lot of universes where Lamb is, you know, he's not ninth overall pick value, which is why I have him, you know, again, we're splitting hairs, but I have him as the 12th overall pick right now. I think there's like, yeah, he's a mid second rounder as opposed to a first round value in fantasy.
I think the real threat to him is the amount of high upside running backs going directly after him is just overwhelming. That the most likely scenario is half of them just outproduce whatever CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson can do, especially in half PPR. And there's just a lot of options. We're only get to a couple of them, but even some of the running backs we're not going to talk about today, like the Kenneth Walker tier, Amarian Hampton, who I think is very boom bust, but like their upsides just clear the threshold that I think a Justin Jefferson and a CeeDee Lamb can get to, given the constraints that they have around them.
Yep. I couldn't agree with that more. That's why for me, there are a couple of those running backs that I've got ranked ahead of CeeDee Lamb, including the next guy that we're going to talk about here, which is James Cook. It's 10th overall pick off the board. I know you've been a little more skeptical of James Cook. So where are kind of the ways that it can go wrong for him?
I've got him at 13th overall. I think it just kind of depends on how much you're buying the case that he's going to be more involved in the pass game. I think there's definitely room for improvement. He's 39th in receptions per game last year. So I think the most likely scenario that comes up a little bit, I would just be surprised if that ever approaches the top 10, especially when you're adding DJ Moore to the mix. Like there's a chance Dalton Kincaid plays more. It's like, all right, how many pass attempts are they actually going to throw this year? And then I think with the James Cook stuff, new offensive line coach, your coordinator gets promoted to head coach. He's never done that before. You lose a guard. The other four players return here. It's going to work out for James Cook. You're just talking about somebody that does not catch passes at the same rate as everybody else does. So to me, you're just like kind of nitpicking that. I think some of the other guys behind him in ADP could just catch more passes and be just as explosive on the ground as James Cook was last year.
Yeah, there obviously a lot of ways it can be mildly disappointing for Cook, you know, which is why he's in the same tier as a lot of the names that you mentioned there, including for me, Kenneth Walker, Derrick Henry. I mean, Derrick Henry, as long as he's Derrick Henry, is going to moonwalk into 10 touchdowns. Yep. Obviously, James Cook scored a bunch of touchdowns last year, but there's always a chance that he just runs with some bad luck at the goal line, and Josh Allen, you know, plunges those things in instead. If the passing game takes a step forward, I do just wonder, like, I really wonder about this defense, like where the Bills defense will be this year too, in terms of game scripts for them. You know, it's a pretty big system overall there for that team, you know, going from what Sean McDermott has done to what Jim Leonard is going to do. So as much as like the offense probably should stay relatively the same with Joe Brady getting the promotion there, and obviously he was the offensive coordinator and play caller, so that should relatively stay the same. The defense is undergoing some pretty significant changes. So that does make me just kind of wonder about game scripts and everything. And yet, Hayden, this team has four games on their schedule against the Dolphins and Jets. Like, James Cook might make your fantasy season when they're smoking the Dolphins and Jets and he's in run heavy game scripts in just those four weeks.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Sometimes, though, the Bills are so far ahead in the division, and we can't say that anymore because the Patriots are involved, where like week 17 rolls around, you're like, all right, how many snaps is James Cook actually going to play this week? But you're in good shape if that's the problem that you have. I would say the last thing I have with him, 5'11", 190, and he's coming off a bunch of touches, you know, like smaller running backs coming off that many carries between the tackle carries. Like, that's where, you know, maybe his injury risk is a little bit higher than some of the others, but we're not allowed to play the injury game here.
I knew as soon as I said that, by the way, about the two games against the Dolphins and Jets, I'm like, guarantee one of them's week 18. The Jets is week 18. So cute joke. And the Dolphins week 17, by the way. So yeah, if they've got which they probably won't have the division wrapped up, but if they've got it wrapped up by then, maybe it's a Ray Davis show in week 17. That's minorly tilting if you draft James Cook in the first round of your fantasy draft. But yeah, I'm generally pretty optimistic about Cook this year, but he's a guy that just tier wise, there are ways it can go wrong for him that don't even involve an injury. We are going to talk a little bit about DJ Moore when we get into the fantasy hotline segment. So that's a fun discussion that we should have there. But for now, let's take another quick break. We come back. We've got three more consensus first round picks to talk about. We will do that right after this break. See you guys in a sec. All right, we're back, and it is time for the 11th overall pick here, Justin Jefferson. And Hayden, I'm still holding the line on Justin Jefferson as a 10th overall player, but and I'm pretty sure this is the exact language I used in the Puka Nacua conversation, getting nervous by the day that Kyler Murray hasn't just like shut the door on this quarterback competition. Like, it's August 6th, man. How have we not just been like, all right, Kyler Murray's a starter. We're done with the McCarthy thing. Am I overthinking it? Am I getting too weirded out by the fact that like Kyler has not slammed the door shut on this whole thing yet? Where are you at with Justin Jefferson, 11th overall? How could it not work out for him as a first round pick?
I just moved him down. We do rankings refreshes every week here at Yahoo. And this was the week where I did move Justin Jefferson down because Kyler Murray's not running away with it. I still think the most likely scenario is it is Kyler Murray and Justin Jefferson goes back to being very, very good. At the same time, I also think because he hasn't ran away with the job, it could be Kyler Murray for 11 weeks, 14 weeks, and then the fantasy playoffs get here, and then we got to see McCarthy one last time to make sure he's not the option. And at that point, I would get really nervous again. So I broke some ties against Justin Jefferson versus all the running backs that I really like in this most recent update. If the narrative kind of changes and it's like, oh yeah, Kyler's just obviously way better and just took a week to pick up the exact ins and outs of the offense, then I would be willing to move Justin Jefferson back up. But we just watched how things go wrong. It's like this is the easiest guy that we've done today by far.
Totally. And even if we want to live in the world where Kyler Murray is the starting quarterback for however long it is this year, I still think it's actually pretty easy to paint the picture of how it doesn't work out for Justin Jefferson. And that's like with the caveat here that it's August 6th and we got a long way to go in preseason because it took a long time for the Colts to get to like, okay, we're starting Daniel Jones. And my whole point in saying that is that about this time last year, my instinct on the Colts quarterback situation was, tell me how both of these guys, like, it doesn't go exactly like this. Both these guys make starts this year and everybody gets fired at the end of the year. It obviously didn't go like that. It was Daniel Jones and he was pretty good for, you know, obviously very, very good for a long stretch of time here. My instinct on August 6th is like, I'm kind of starting to think the quarterback on the depth chart there is perfect.
I would say it's, I was just zooming in. It's a frightening image. They almost look alike.
if you guys are just audio listeners right now, it is worth going to the Yahoo Fantasy YouTube channel, which by the way, you should be subscribed to, like the video, help us out here. Okay, we're building up the channel. And just checking out the quarterback, we have depth charts for every team, and Jason Jung outdid himself on this one with QB who knows, and it's a half face of Kyler Murray, half face of JJ McCarthy. And yeah, their hairlines and the smiles do line up alarmingly well.
Alarmingly yeah, well. Aside from the difference in the races, they do look very similar.
just height-wise, you know, not the same either. Although JJ's not the biggest dude in the world. I wonder who weighs more. Okay, beyond that point. Got to get back on track. My brain is everywhere now. Okay, so here's the thing. I am starting to think, like, tell me how both quarterbacks in the who knows, you know, conglomerate here don't make starts this year, and I kind of worry that like everybody's gonna get fired at the end of the year. Kevin O'Connell probably too good for that, but I don't know. Here's the other thing I would say. Kyler Murray is a very boom bust quarterback. I think even if you're like a Kyler truther or you're a Kyler hater, you could agree that there's a bust and a boom aspect to his game. He's not going to throw consistently over the middle of the field where Justin Jefferson with Sam Darnold was absolutely cooking over the intermediate and deep middle of the field that season. So whatever. I do think Kevin O'Connell's offense is almost like too boom bust to a degree.
Agree.
I am not like a JJ McCarthy apologist by any means. That offense did not really help him out too much last year with just how vertically inclined everything is. So even if Kyler is the starter for week one, and then, you know, let's just go ahead and call it 14 or more games, I still think that could be like a pretty rocky road for Justin Jefferson as the 11th overall player.
Yeah, I think that the KOC stuff, I love his offense, but it takes like a pretty competent quarterback and someone that's really willing to hold on to the ball. I remember when Sam Darnold had those back-to-back games where they got eliminated and he took all those sacks. I remember watching that game back on All-22 and be like, what the heck just happened here? And if you watch those, there was no outlet underneath. And that Sam Darnold was waiting. And it's like, okay, we're doing two post routes in a go route. Yeah, you're going to take some sacks. I think KOC, if he was just speaking honest about it, he's like, well, yeah, we're going to get sacked sometimes, and then we're going to have a 40-yard completion in the hole. And I think in the aggregate, he is right that that is a more efficient way to play. but it does require the quarterback to be able to execute that. Darnold was awesome at it. Kirk Cousins was pretty cool at it too. I think Kyler Murray can do that, but some of those like crossing routes that Justin Jefferson was hitting with Darnold, that's something where you kind of have to, you know, speculate a little bit with the Kyler Murray stuff. I still feel good that we're back to having a real ceiling with Justin Jefferson. It's just, you know, so does all of the other players being drafted right after him.
Sometimes teams like take a third receiver that I think really it's like a declaration of intent on what they want to be. And that year in 2025 after the Sam Darnold, because I think Sam Darnold's 2024 season, obviously he just won the Super Bowl with Seahawks, but like that season has aged really well. And honestly, I think it was underappreciated at the time, and it's like more underappreciated in hindsight. And I was probably guilty of underappreciating it, by the way. But shout out to the Sam Darnold oligarchs. But I think that the thing that stuck out in my mind after that season was in 2025, they signed the late Rondale Moore, and they drafted Ty Felton, these like kind of small spit the ball out and yards after catch type players. And I think they wanted like that guy, but Ty Felton didn't do anything. And obviously Rondale Moore was injured all year, of course. So it's just like they now their third receiver is like Juwan Jennings, which to me indicates like Kevin O'Connell says this every year. He wants to like get the run game going and all that. Like, I think that's what Juwan Jennings is here for. And like, I just don't really know if I buy the run game this year. So I have a lot. The Vikings were an interesting offseason team to talk about, but I'm still sitting here at the beginning of August, and I don't feel like I have a lot of answers about how this offense is going to play out this year, which makes me nervous for a first-round fantasy pick.
I still like to play the optimistic angle with KOC, and especially the offensive line has a chance to be really good. Like Darisaw and O'Neal, those guys have obviously missed some time there, but when those guys are healthy, and then Donovan Jackson going into his second season, I thought that he flashed enough. Fries has been around the block as well, so it does feel like this offensive line has, you know, materialized. They have to stay healthy and prove it, but I do think that there's some semblance of an upside. Whatever happened to TJ Hawkinson? This is something for the other for another show. Like, this guy was supposed to be awesome, and like nobody talks about TJ Hawkinson ever, and I think there's like reasons for that. It definitely comes back to the injury, but that's another one of these guys who in theory should be working over the middle and underneath, but like he's just not part of the game plan.
Yeah, not been great since the injury for TJ Hawkinson. Okay, we have two players to talk about here technically at the 12th overall pick because their ADPs are super, super close and they've kind of been flipping back and forth. It's Ashton Jeanty and Saquon Barkley. Let's talk Barkley first because I think it's kind of it's really hard to paint like a super pessimistic picture for Barkley, but how does it not work out for Saquon Barkley this year?
It's just the Jalen Hurts offense, like, just turns out to be just the Jalen Hurts offense, and that wasn't the coordinator last year. Look, I think it was the coordinator last year, so I don't think that's like the greatest thing we can talk about. The other thing would just be like the offensive line has played a lot, and they've very injured last year, and like you don't know about Dickerson's back, you don't know about Lane Johnson and his health, and like those type of things. Dallas Goedert was not a good blocker last year. For whatever reason, he's been older. I think they have a good offensive coordinator now. You lose your Hall of Fame level O-line coach and Jeff Stoutland. I'm grading towards the positive angle here, but it's just a similar enough season from last year does make him not worth a first round pick.
Yeah. Similar-ish season for him last year, which I do think is kind of within the range of outcomes. I really go back and forth on Barkley, who for me I have right now as the 11th overall player, and I am also kind of flip-flopping back and forth between like him and Ashton Jeanty, who we're going to talk about. But there's just ways where, yeah, the offensive line, we're not supposed to play the he gets hurt card, and I guess we can't also play the offensive line guys all get hurt card and the Jeff Stoutland moving on card, but that's how it doesn't work out for Barkley. And also, you know, he's another year older, has taken a ton of punishment, and you know, maybe was like a slightly diminished player last year than he was in 2024 when he was like one of the best backs in the league. So I think there's definitely some risk with Barkley, which is why if you want to tell me he's an early second round pick and not a first round pick, I can totally hear that argument. How do you weigh him versus a guy like Ashton Jeanty, who's the last player we're going to talk about here? Paint me the pessimistic picture on Ashton Jeanty without just telling me to go back and watch the 2024 film. Excuse me, 2025.
It's the same thing with Justin Jefferson. Just like, you know, it's the same old season as last year. I don't draft much Ash and Jenty at all. I've got him ranked 15th, but like that's a pretty big difference between where he goes, and like there's a lot of good players in that range. To me, you have to, first of all, the environment has to improve. It's going to improve, but also has to like improve multiple tiers to me. And then I question Ashton, and this is where you get in trouble saying this out loud. I question if Ashton and Jenty really is like one of those guys. And by one of those guys, I mean Saquon, Bijan, Gibbs, Jonathan Taylor. What if Ashton Jenty is more Josh Jacobs? I think he's a better receiver than Josh Jacobs has ever been. What if he is like closer to like, you know, like Marshawn Lynch, who was awesome, but was not quite as explosive as these guys. And if he's not going to have the same level of explosiveness, and I do think he dances a little bit and seeks contact, I do think like that's how he just isn't rip enough explosive plays, even with the environment kind of improving a little bit. So you just never know. Like this offensive line, the right side still is brutal to me with Jackson Powers Johnston and DJ Glaze. And then they also have six slot receivers and nobody that can play on the outside. Like, could that end up factoring in here? I think that can.
And nobody getting a lot of like pop from camp at this point, you know. Actually, one of their rookies that we're going to talk about has maybe been the most interesting one when we get to the hotline segment, which will tell you just where, like, is Malik Benson going to play a big role this year? That's where the Raiders receiver room is right now. So, yeah, there are ways where the team they're still a bad team again. It feels better because it's a new coach, and I am a Kubiak fan. I'm a Fernando Mendoza fan, but it's not always immediate. Like, most rookie quarterbacks are bad. You know, people still have a lot of faith in Cam Ward. Coming out of year one, and he was a horrible quarterback from a statistical perspective, and that was not a fruitful offensive environment. Like, that can very much be the case with Ashton Jenty. Two things real quick on Jenty before we close the loop on these first round picks. One, to your point about like, is he not in the Bijan, you know, give tier, whatever, that was generally their scouting report on Ashton Jenty. I mean, when anytime you'd ask like a draft value, you'd be like, well, he's not in that Bijan or, you know, that tier, but he's the next tier down. It's like, okay, well, that tier difference makes a whole hell of a lot of difference when we're talking about like Bijan can survive the Falcons and can Ashton Jenty survive the Raiders? Because last year the answer was no. Like, Jenty generally was a fine fantasy player last year in the aggregate when you look at it, but it was a real slog based on him being a first round pick for the most part last year, and now he's first round pick again this year. And the second thing is, and we'll leave it here on this just to paint the paint the range of outcomes and everything here for Ashton Jenty. Tell me why, Hayden, Ashton Jenty is a better fantasy pick than Kenneth Walker this year without telling me where Ashton Jenty was drafted in the NFL draft last year.
I mean, I have no argument against it. I have Kenneth Walker. I moved him up to 9th overall. Like, I want to be the highest on Walker of anybody. I think that the infrastructure is in line. He's a good football player. Like, I can make the case that Kenneth Walker is better than Ashton Jenty straight up. Just watching the games.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think that's fair. I have Walker 15th overall, which is four spots higher than his current Yahoo ADP. And yeah, I mean, I really want to rank him ahead of Derrick Henry. I really like Derrick Henry. But again, yeah. So then it's kind of like, well, do I like these guys better than Ashton Jenty? I really don't know. I really don't know if I do. And I kind of like the way those run games are set up in Baltimore and Kansas City a little bit more than what I think the Raiders are. And I think the Raiders will be better last year. The problem is that they were 32nd or 31st. So long way to go for the Las Vegas Raiders. We are going to take our final break of the show. We come back. We're introducing our new fantasy hotline segment. We will get into that right after this. All right, we are back. And welcome to the Fantasy Hotline presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Every Thursday, we are taking your most pressing questions for Fantasy Hotline. And today, we are covering which training camp hype players to buy or sell. Hayden, we have the people out there send in great questions, and some very interesting, a wide range of names here that we are going to discuss, whether we're buying or selling these ones. First question comes in from Kamon_Levi. I love that I get to read Twitter handles. I'm so bad at this. Okay. After the first episode of Hard Knocks, I feel like Jadarian Price should be discussed. Hayden, real quick before I go to the second part of the question, are you watching Hard Knocks?
No, I don't watch any TV, pretty much.
Okay, I'm not watching Hard Knocks either. And I also only watch TV when it's raining outside and I have to walk on the treadmill in the garage in the morning. That's pretty much my only TV consumption these days. The Diplomat, by the way, on Netflix. Nice show. Anyways, so I was like, can you clarify this for me, buddy? Because I don't know what we're talking about with Hard Knocks. But anyways, they followed up and said the clips of the episode show that he's extremely agile in space and was dicing through the defense, pre-pads mostly. The running back coach went to bat for him early on in the coaches meeting that they showed. Producer Colin, who is a sicko consuming Hard Knocks, informed me that, quote, they basically made Jadarian Price look like a god on the show. So are you buying Jadarian Price's deity level performance and editing here in Hard Knocks?
I believe that the editing could showcase that he looks really good. I will say this. There's sometimes I see Twitter like praising running back clips when the defense is clearly not trying to tackle the player. They're like, wow, he ripped open another big run. I'm like, well, do you see how the linebacker like went like he pretended to tackle him? That would have been an actual tackle. But I think that Price is interesting in that we just have to figure out, is he going to catch passes or not? Because in college, he didn't have many pass protection reps at all. I think that's what Helani's going to be doing early on in the season. But if he's actually going to get some receptions on early downs, then that's how he can kind of separate from the committee that Kenneth Walker had when Charbonnet was healthy. And then the other part, obviously, is just how much longer until we see Charbonnet. There's been some reports like he could be back earlier than later. I mean, he tore his ACL so late into the season. Like, he would be a complete outlier if we saw him. Even in October, that would be an outlier return. So there's a lot of moving parts here. I think he's fine. He's not somebody that I want to like chase up just because I do believe that Helani and Zach Charbonnet are going to have a real role here.
Yeah, and like they can talk about how the running back coach can say he went to bat for him early on and the whole deal. The one thing I keep making the point on is that they were pretty fine, Nick, not taking Jadarian Price at the 32nd overall pick. They were desperately trying to trade out of that pick. So I think that kind of makes it flimsy when it comes to that part. But yeah, from a fantasy standpoint, I'm pretty much where you are, that he's not somebody I want to chase up. He's somebody that I do think is really interesting at his ADP, which right now is like a sixth round pick, about 65th, 66th overall. I've got him maybe in the 70s. So I think just kind of skeptical just about that part of it, like the true ceiling outcome for him. But I mean, it gets pretty gross pretty quickly at running back, especially relative to some of those guys that are going in the round five area. I mean, like we're taking guys like Quinshon Judkins. We're taking guys, Cam Scadaboo. I didn't realize how behind ADP I am on Cam Scadaboo until I like compared my rankings to Yahoo. And I was like, damn, I didn't really know that people were that excited about Scadaboo as a fourth round pick when like, I'm not sure how good he is. And I'm not sure how good the Giants are. I'm not sure how good that Jadarian Price is because he's a rookie. But I'm pretty convinced that the Seahawks will be good, like from an offensive standpoint. So that's like a tie in his favor, even if I have him ranked behind those guys.
Yeah, I don't really talk that positively about Jadarian Price, but I am right at ADP. He's my 63rd overall player, and that's where he goes in both best ball and on Yahoo. So I'm fine with where he's going. I just think that they do seem pretty committed to having this be a rotation, and they're just not proof that he's going to be catching a bunch of passes. That's another narrative, is like you'll see a lot of running backs are like, they're getting the ball in practice. He's catching passes. Like, first of all, every running back in the NFL can catch a football. Like, that's like not the part that's that we're worried about here. It's just like having the timing, being on the field, not giving away tendencies. It's like those type of things where I think like actually make the difference. So it's one of those narratives where I don't always buy like, oh, this guy's catching passes. He's going to do that in when the games are on. You know, you just never know what drills they're practicing. And then you beating a linebacker 25 yards down the field on one-on-ones is like one thing versus, you know, actually doing that in the games.
I mean, one-on-one reps are just like atrocious for judging anything. Insane. I mean, those guys are so slated their advantage in a one-on-one situation. Yeah, you mentioned Twitter, like judging the running back reps when a guy's like literally not being tackled. I'm pretty much out on Twitter's ability to evaluate anything for the most part.
With all due respect.
With all due respect. I do not need anyone telling me like, look at Jalen Waddle's limp here. I'm like, Okay, just tell me when he's going to practice or not, like whatever. I say as like the biggest Jalen Waddle bag holder right now, so maybe I'm revealing myself there. Okay, let's get to the next question. This one's Sack Kings 2618. Sacramento Kings, just want to make that clear. What's your take on some of the rookie receiver buzz coming out of camp? I'm thinking guys like Denzel Boston, Caleb Douglas, Jacoby Lane, and Malik Benson. Do any of these guys have a chance at fantasy relevance in 2026? Okay, now I'm going to let you answer, just like pick one of these guys here to talk about. But before I do, I want to note that one of my theories on like offseason receiver buzz in OTAs and mini camps, it's the small jitterbug, you know, little guys. Shout out to the late great Chris Wessling. He always used to talk about like, this is the Paris Campbell corollary. And I kind of think like Malik Benson's buzz was coming mostly from minicamp. And I don't really know that much about Benson, honestly. I need to do some more work on him. He's not a guy I charted pre-draft, but like that's where his buzz came from. And he's kind of that small, fast guy. Denzel Boston, then okay, so Denzel Boston, Jacoby Lane are the next ones, which is training camp. To me, this is where I'm extending Chris's research here, the doctorate level research, is that in training camp, the contested catch bros always get a ton of love. And I'm a Denzel Boston guy, but I just want to note that, like, oh yeah, Jacoby Lane and Denzel Boston are tearing up. That's because any idiot, even the idiots on Twitter, can be like, that contested catch is sick, okay? Like, yep. Stock up for this guy. And that's not to say that either of those guys aren't going to work out. I just want to note, like, these are the guys, especially rookies, who usually get hyped, maybe overhyped in training camp.
And then these easily could be like, they practice red zone for the entire day. And it's like, oh yeah, of course, like Denzel Boston had a couple contested catches down there. Like, that's when he's going to get used, where it's the other parts of the field that he might not get used. Do these guys have a chance at fantasy relevance? Of course, a chance. The problem with Denzel Boston and then with Caleb Douglas is like these offenses are projected for so few points that even if they are on the field, even if they are catching four passes per game, they still don't matter in redraft leagues, especially Yahoo. The default settings are only two wide receivers. Like, the bar is so high for relevance. I do think that Denzel Boston, Caleb Douglas, and Jacoby Lane like can be NFL starters for multiple seasons, like that we could actually care about them. So in really deep leagues, best ball, I have been drafting some Caleb Douglas now, and I find him pretty interesting because it does seem like Chris Bell might have to have like an entire redshirt year. And then I'm not that surprised that Jacoby Lane and Elijah Serrat, I view that as kind of a toss-up, and I think that we just saw ways to go before who's going to win that job. Denzel Boston's the one that you could theoretically draft in your standard redraft league, though.
Yeah, you can squint at it with Denzel Boston because, like I said, prospect that I liked. I thought it was kind of a shame that he fell where he did. I think it was a first-round receiver. I think him and Casey Concepcion are going to be a great duo long-term for this Browns offense. And, you know, against all odds, I'm kind of invested in Shedeur Sanders like being a good player for them, at least for this year. Yeah, we'll see about that. But, you know, just enough for these guys to flash this year. So he's the one that's interesting. And just quickly on Lane, I mean, listen, could he be a sacrificial X receiver for this team this year? Definitely. Don't think that's much. Him winning a bunch of contested catches in training camp, which has mostly been every highlight I've seen, like, we knew he could do that. It's, can he like separate on the NFL field enough to get targets? And lastly, Caleb Douglas, man. I mean, Caleb Douglas has to be the rookie receiver that nobody cares about the most of all time. And I say that, like, I actually think Caleb Douglas can play a little bit, but there's been a pretty consistent positive drumbeat on Caleb Douglas. And I see like zero dynasty bros on my timeline hyping him up, which, you know, maybe means he'll be nothing. But if you have like a late pick in your rookie draft is still ongoing, like, I think there's a very viable path to him being at least a good system fit in Miami. And yet again, think about the cornerbacks he's going against in training camp practice for the Dolphins. So maybe that could be part of it.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think there's going to be fourth quarters where there's going to be some free receptions in this offense. I think a lot of those will go to Greg Dulcich and Malik Washington at the same time. We're talking about Greg Dulcich and Malik Washington. If Caleb Douglas can play the guitar, he's going to be at least on our like waiver wire radar. So I think that he's pretty interesting. Yeah, all the reports on him have been actually pretty solid. So I would not be surprised if like he led the Dolphins in receiving this year. Does that mean anything? Probably not, but that would be kind of cool.
Probably not. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. And again, for your dynasty bags, maybe that's something there. Breaking news into the show, Jahmyr Gibbs signs a 3-year, $67.5 million deal. that could be worth up to about $75.75 million. So shout out to Jahmyr Gibbs, who heard us saying there's no way he could be a bad pick in fantasy this year, and said it's time to sign the dotted line because Hayden and Harmon said so. Okay, final question that we'll get in here before we get out of here. This is from FF Jury. Obviously, Cyrus Allen, you know, someone you could talk about, but IMO, you've talked about him enough on RP. Yeah, correct. I feel like I do talk about I am talking about Cyrus Allen too much. Just kidding. There's no such thing. Did you hear in Bert Breer's article, the Chiefs think he's the next Stephon Diggs? That's right. They need to sign Stephon Diggs. They've got Steph Diggs at home, baby. Okay, we talked about Cyrus
Allen. Right.
So the other three names mentioned here, Casey Concepcion, DJ Moore, Bucky Irving. I actually want to talk about DJ Moore with you a little bit because I saw you posted about Moore earlier this week, and literally we were sharing a brain on kind of just some of your thought process with DJ Moore. So unpack that one a little bit. Like, where are you at DJ Moore relative to some of the other receivers around his ADP?
Yeah, so I think we have to separate the discussions here. I thought that the Bills trading the capital for him and then extending him was doing too much for what I think DJ Moore is. But at the same time, I would not be surprised if DJ Moore tries harder, cares more now that he's like in a Super Bowl contending team where he's definitely the top option, just based off of the investments, where you could not argue that once they had Rome Odunze, Luther Burden, and Colston Loveland. So I'm expecting him to just play better this year than the year prior. And I think that the target competition is pretty weak, considering the Bills are second in projected points. And all the other teams around them, that's the Rams, the Lions, the Bengals, the Ravens, both of the Cowboys wide receivers, you have to draft their number one wide receivers in the first or the second round only. And DJ Moore is now priced way, way, way lower than that. I have him in the same tier as the Mike Evans, Devontae Adams types. And I would just take the younger guy if I am hunting in that tier. So I moved him up just because he doesn't have to be that great to be very relevant. I mean, we were drafting Gabe Davis in what round? I think that was about in this area. I think that DJ Moore, for his words, was better. Yes. Like, I mean, we can have DJ Moore do a Gabe Davis plus season this year. I think that's totally possible.
That is totally possible. And I'll just put a bow on it here. That was really exactly, again, my thoughts on Moore relative to some of those other wideouts. But I had this discussion with Nate on Football 301, where if you look at DJ Moore, like the routes that he runs really well, they're the routes that are going to be run in this offense. In reception perception, and it was not the routes that were run in Ben Johnson's offense. So people can go check that out on the AFC East preview if they want more of a deep dive on it. But I ended up deep diving myself and playing with the formula for way too long after that discussion to try to quantify like receivers being misused. He was the sixth most misused receiver relative to like the routes he ran versus the routes he's good on last year among the guys that I charted. So I think if there's a flip here, he actually will just straight up look better than he did as an individual last year, in addition to all the other things that you laid out there. But all right, that is going to do it for our first fantasy hotline here. Got a lineup dilemma, trade debate, or league controversy? The fantasy hotline is open all season long. So send us your toughest questions. We might just feature them on an upcoming episode. And that is going to do it for us here today. Thanks to our friends again over at Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who are here all season celebrating the passion, traditions, and unforgettable moments that make football America's obsession. Hayden, shout out to you, buddy. Great show. We tried to do the best we could to talk down the best players in the NFL. We will be back on Sunday. Scott Pienowski joins me to kick off position preview week by looking at the quarterbacks this year. That's going to be live, as always, right here, 4 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. Until then, we are out.